compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show, and thank you again for listening. When I say thank you, I mean thank you. I really appreciate it. My number is 888-914-9149. As the current press secretary might say, I'm going to circle back to a story that I shared with you in the second hour of the show today.
I hate to disappoint you, but I will have to circle back with you on that as well.
Yes, that. Exactly that. So first of all, I want to give a shout out to one of our charter members of Team Taco on Twitter, and that's Bill Moody. Bill, he did some research. Actually, he knew the answer to this question before, and he posted it to me. And that is that this is a legitimate story. This is real. And he also supplied me with another article that I'll share with you in just a minute. So you're saying, okay, well, what is it? Get to the point. Well, here's the point. The Guardian, the UK Guardian, is pointing out that Amazon's U.S. customers have 1 week to opt out of a mass wireless sharing scheme that's going on. I'll just read it to you. This is being reported this morning in The Guardian. Amazon customers have 1 week to opt out of a plan that would turn every Echo speaker and Ring security camera in the U.S. into a shared wireless network as part of the company's plan to fix connection problems for its smart home devices. The proposal, called Amazon Sidewalk, involves the company's devices being used as a springboard to build citywide mesh networks that help simplify the process of setting up new devices, keeping them online even if they're out of range of home Wi-Fi, and extend the range of the tracking devices such as those made by Tile. But Sidewalk has come under fire for apparent lack of transparency with which Amazon has rolled out the feature, as well as the limited time available for users to complete the tricky process required to opt out. Other critics have expressed concern that failing to turn the setting off could leave you, the customer, in breach of your internet service provider's terms and conditions. Amazon Sidewalk is a shared network that helps devices work better, the company said in a Q&A document for users. Now, we're going to post a link to this so you can read it for yourself and make your own decisions. The statement from Amazon continues. In the meantime, in the future, Sidewalk will support a range of experiences from using Sidewalk-enabled devices such as smart security and lighting and diagnostics for appliances and tools. The feature works by creating a low-bandwidth network using smart home devices such as Amazon Echoes and Ring security cameras. At its simplest, it means that a new Echo can set itself up using a neighbor's Wi-Fi, or a security camera can continue to send motion alerts even if its connection to the internet is disrupted by piggybacking on the connection of another camera across the street.
This mission is too important for me to allow you to jeopardize it.
Pipe down, Hal. Other devices that don't need a high bandwidth connection, such as smart lights, pet locators, and smart locks, can use Sidewalk all the time. But the company's plans have caused alarm among observers. Ashkan Soltani, a former chief technology officer of the U.S. Federal Trade Commission, told the tech site Ars Technica, quote, in addition to capturing everyone's shopping habits from Amazon and their internet activity, as AWS is one of the most dominant web hosting services, that's Amazon Web Services, now they're also effectively becoming a global ISP with the flick of a switch, all without even having to lay a single foot of fiber. The feature may also break the terms and conditions of users' internet connections, which do not allow such resharing. Users can disable Sidewalk in the settings section of the Alexa or Ring apps, but have until June 8th to do so. So we're looking at 6 days from now. After that, if they have taken no action, the network will be turned on and their devices will become Sidewalk bridges. Amazon is not the first company to look at creating such a network. Apple has taken a similar approach with the company's range of AirTag item trackers, which can connect to the internet through any compatible iPhone they come into contact with, not simply their own owners. And BT, through a long-term partnership with Phone, ran a service from 2007 to 2020 that allowed broadband customers to share bandwidth in a public Wi-Fi network. There's a little bit more. I think I can quote the rest of this to you. Yeah, let's just leave it at that.
You don't want to circle back?
You know, I do want to circle back, but I want to circle back. Do you want to circle back, Cyrus? I guess that's my question. Do you want to circle back?
Well, maybe this answers your question.
I'll circle back if there's more I can share with you, but I'll circle back if there's more to convey. I'll have to just circle back with you. We can circle back. I'm happy to circle back. So I can circle back.
All right.
You had enough already? It goes on for 4 more minutes.
That's Jen Psaki circling back. Circle back. She's doing the circle back.
It's like the Macarena. It's just circle back.
Somebody should do an auto tune of this program. That would be great.
No.
Do it.
No,
somebody,
I just want to make
that.
Fun of other people. I don't want people to make fun of me.
You could sing the backup vocals, Cyrus.
I'm sure I will.
I like those auto tunes. Those are fun.
Yeah, they are fun. They're
that
great.
Is pretty funny.
Yeah.
Okay, so now I want to share what my buddy Bill on Twitter, what he sent me. And again, thank you, Bill Moody, for sending me this. So this is an article about the same story from The Verge. And this is how to opt out or into, if you want to, Amazon Sidewalk Network. The new network will share a small portion of your bandwidth with your neighbors. So, Cyrus, I don't know how well you get along with your neighbors, but if your neighbor needs some extra bandwidth, if you're in the system, he can just piggyback on your Wi-Fi from your house that you're paying for.
Why is my streaming all pixelated all of a sudden?
You know, here's the other thing. Now, I don't know, but I've been told. I really haven't been told, but I wonder, what if somebody does something illegal, like looking at an illegal form of pornography? I mean, pornography is bad enough as it is, but what if somebody next door is surfing your internet, your Wi-Fi, and is doing something illegal? If it's on your Wi-Fi, how do you prove that it wasn't you, number one? And are you liable for any criminal proceedings if you didn't do anything but your neighbor's making use of your Wi-Fi? That's a question to ask, don't you think?
That is a very important question. What if they're downloading music or movies illegally?
Mm-hmm.
And then you're getting these letters, these cease and desist, like, hey, mm-hmm. Stop. We saw you downloaded the new Kanye West album.
Your IP. We logged it.
I don't listen. It's not me. Sure, it's not you, Mr. Simcoe. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. All of those, all the K-pop songs that you downloaded. Okay, so here's what The Verge says. Do you own an Echo Studio, an Echo Dot, or a Ring floodlight camera? If so, Amazon is about to introduce your device to a new type of network called Sidewalk, which is meant to help extend the range of its low bandwidth devices so that if your network goes down, for example, your Dot can piggyback on your neighbor's Wi-Fi, and also to make location devices such as Tile more efficient. According to Amazon, Sidewalk will use Bluetooth low energy, the 900 millihertz spectrum, and is it millihertz or megahertz? I don't know. I think it's megahertz, and other frequencies to simplify new device setup, extend low bandwidth working range of devices, and help devices stay online and up to date even if they're outside of the range of the home's Wi-Fi. It's going to be switched on June the 8th, and it plans to automatically opt in all eligible devices. And there's a list here. It's too long for me to read, but I'll give you some of the highlights here. Ring's floodlight camera, Ring Spotlight Camera, Ring Spotlight Cam Mount, Echo Dot for Kids, Echo Dot with Clock, Echo Plus, Echo Show, Echo Spot, Echo Studio. These are all real things. Echo Input, Echo Flex, Echo Domani. That was a wine that was popular in the 90s. I don't know what happened to it. So in this article, they explain to you how you can opt out. And we'll let you get this article with all of the links to how to do it by going to relevantradio.com/Patrick. And it's also going to be on our Twitter feed, but the Twitter feed is embedded at relevantradio.com/Patrick. So if you want to opt out, I'm going to opt out when the show is over. Guess what I'm going to do, Cyrus, when the show is over?
I'm doing it right now.
I'm going to circle back to this, and I'm going to opt out. Because, you know, I've got some of those cameras. I mean, I'm like anyone else. I mean, I like automation, and I like the ability. You know what time? One time, Cyrus, Nancy, and I were in Oxford, England one day, and we were bebopping along in Oxford, England, and all of a sudden my phone rang. It didn't ring like a phone call, but it made a sound, and it pops up my Ring doorbell, and there's some guy like wandering around, you know, like on the front porch. I couldn't quite figure out what was going on. So standing, and this is in real time, you know, I'm able to see it as it's actually happening, and it's recording it as it happens. So I was able to get in touch with like the local PD, which was amazing. And so, yeah, they said, well, we'll send somebody over to have a look at it. Turns out it was a neighbor's lawn guy who had showed up at the wrong house. He was there to spray the lawn for dandelions, and he showed up at the wrong house. And my Ring doorbell told me this while I was, you know, 5,000-6,000 miles away. You don't sound impressed.
No, I'm my jaw's open. That's awesome. You're on the other side of the world, and you're looking out through your doorbell, and you're easily able to access local authorities to make sure nothing
weird is going on.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. But now that same technology is going to be used nefariously?
It could be. I mean, just imagine the possibilities, it seems to me. So we're happy to provide the means for you to be able to opt out. You'll find all of it. Cyrus is going to post it, and you'll find it on the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick. Check it out and opt out if you think that that's what you need to do. Okay, get Gilbert sorted out here. Let's go in the meantime to Judy in Scottsdale, Arizona. Hi, Judy.
Hi, Patrick. Last week at Mass, the gospel was the angel Gabriel appeared to the Virgin Mary and told her that she was going to have a son and she would name him Jesus. My question is that the first time we know of the name Jesus being used in history, or was that a name that had been around for a while?
That had been around for a while. Yeah, that was a word that was, Joshua is the more traditional way to say it. We say Jesus in English, but Yeshua would be more closely how you would pronounce it. And so even all the way back...
old Jewish...
even all the way back to Joshua, as we say it in English, who was the protege of Moses all those years ago, that's the same name. He had the same name that Jesus has.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, I've been thinking about that. All right, thank you. You've answered my question.
Happy to be of service, Judy. It's nice to chat with you. Thank you. Let's go to John. Hopefully Gilbert will call back. Looks like he might be back. Let's go to John in Austin, Texas. Hi, John.
Hey, Patrick, can you hear me well?
I can, thank you.
Okay, good. My question is on the bishops addressing the pro-life or not pro-life politicians.
Right.
And if I could kind of mention my concerns, and if you could clear it up for me, because
okay,
I'm really looking for clarification. I'm pro-life, but what my thoughts are, like when the pronoun talk came and other issues about homosexuality came out, I remember businesses deciding where they're going to build their new plant, in which state, you know, based on how a state was passing their legislation. Right. And so one of my concerns is if it's around Roe versus Wade, and which the way I understand it would just kick it back, kick the issue back to the states. Doesn't that open up just a ton of complications? And so in my mind, a federal protection is what's needed. And so then my question is, or my additional question or concern would be, what standard would bishops use to determine? Is it like how the politician self-identifies? Because I can see some problems with that. I remember the 14, you know, bloody Republicans or whatever that didn't vote, how they had campaigned. And
John, help me out here. John, let me pause you. I'm getting lost now. I'm not entirely sure what you're asking me. Could you, and that's my fault, not yours. I'm just not sure where we're going. So could you condense this into a question in a sentence or two for me?
Yeah, no, it's probably my fault. I struggle to be concise. I guess the question is, what is the standard that the bishops would tell whether this politician is actively pro-life or not? Because couldn't they not support a specific piece of legislation and just want to approach the issue a different way? Or is it how they self-identify, like the politician calls themselves pro-life?
Okay, I think I understand. So keeping in mind, of course, that the church is pro-life, what the church means by pro-life, I would say, as the bishops have been reminding us, is preeminently, in this current situation, abortion. But it extends to many other issues beyond abortion. So there's also, how do we help immigrants? How do we help with poverty? How do we help many different forms of life? How do we help in this area? But right now, the most urgent of these, which is not to say that the other ones aren't urgent in themselves, but the most urgent, if you're going to triage these issues, is this wanton destruction of human life in abortion. So this is why the bishops have been reminding us that this is the preeminent issue of our time right now. So taking that into account, it seems to me that a politician, whoever he or she may be, can be identified as either living the Catholic faith and in operating as a politician in concert with Catholic moral teachings on the basis of, if it's a legislator, what does the voting record say? Is this politician, is this a congressman or a senator? Does this congressman or senator vote in favor of pro-abortion laws? That would be one way to know. It's a public record. The same would be true in the case of an executive, whether a governor or a president. Governors really don't have much to say in the area of abortion, but presidents certainly do. And so in their speeches and their executive orders or what have you, those are all ways to know with certitude whether or not somebody is playing a game. You know, are you really a Catholic in the sense that you are trying to live your Catholic faith according to the church's teaching? Or are you Catholic when it's convenient for you and you are cozying up to big abortion because of the money and the power and the influence and things like that? I think those are the markers. And it seems to me that it's not hard to tell for the most part. I mean, I don't know anybody in public life who's very successful in hiding how they feel about this issue one way or the other. So I think those would be the answers to the question. I hope that's helpful, John. It's an important question you're asking. Thank you. Let's go to Gilbert now. Gilbert, it's good to have you back. Welcome.
Thank you. Sorry, I wasn't ready.
No problem.
And thank you for taking my call. My question is, I just admitted to myself that I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to AA. And is it okay for me to still drink the blood of Christ at church?
Well, when you say, is it okay, I think the question is that going to knock you off the wagon? So if you're sober and going to Holy Communion and receiving our Lord's precious blood, which continues to have the properties of wine, even though it's no longer wine, would that be enough to knock you off the wagon? If the answer is yes, and I know there are some people who are very hardcore on this issue, and they would say, no, not even a drop under any circumstances, because that would, you know, set you back. And that may be true for any given person, but it may not be true for some people.
Well, that wouldn't be true for me. I think I would be all right.
Well, you could try it. You know, I don't think that would affect sobriety. So if you've got 1 year of sobriety under your belt, let's say, and you receive our Lord and Holy Communion in the precious blood, I personally would not regard that as a violation of your sobriety commitment. I would see that as that's something separate.
I'm actually new.
Mm-hmm, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm actually new. I'm at 2 weeks.
Oh, congratulations. That's awesome.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
How do you feel?
Actually, I have my good days and bad days. I feel good right now, but good. I have my times where I am craving alcohol and I really want it really bad. And mm-hmm. I call my sponsor and we talk through it and I feel better afterwards. I went to a meeting once. It was right before meeting time, so I went to a meeting, and after the meeting, I feel great. So I'm having all my tough times, but I'm getting by.
God bless you. Well, you know, you've got many other good people, men and women, who are in the same situation you're in, and look to their good example. Ask, who am I to tell you, because you're in that program and you know the principles, but just from what I've seen from the outside is that, you know, this ability to overcome this craving, it is possible. And with God's help, mm-hmm. you know, you're going to do it. So let's get back to your question, though. Okay, so here's where I might have a bit of concern. Because the precious blood obviously is no longer actual wine. It's the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus under the appearance of wine. It still has the properties of wine. So a tiny little sip for some people would be enough to trigger, you know, they're going to go out and have a beer or 10 beers or whatever. For some people, right. that may not be the case. So my advice to you, speaking as an outsider, would be maybe go for a year or so without receiving our Lord and Holy Communion that way. And I don't think you can right now. I don't think it's possible because of COVID. I think that's it's no longer
right. yeah, you're right.
offered. Okay. So my advice would be, I'll just say this, Gilbert. My advice would be maybe say for the next year, I'm going to receive only under the one species, the bread, well, the Holy Eucharist. And mm-hmm. after a year, if we still have that, it may not be available in a year from now. We'll see. But if it is, I will try with a tiny sip and see what happens. And if you see, uh-oh, it triggered the cravings or, you know, I had a real tough times, you know, not going to get a six-pack or something, then I would say there's right. your answer. There's your answer.
Okay.
And then just okay. receive under one kind.
Okay. Okay. I appreciate it.
You got mm-hmm. it, Gilbert. Hang in there, man.
Can I ask you one more question?
I think we're over time. Yeah. Sorry about that. But call yeah. me back another time, that's Gilbert. Okay. I'd love to talk to you. Thank you. A little Boston to take us out. We've got about 35 minutes to go in this hour, which is the end of the show. So if you've been thinking about calling, call now. 888-914-9149. I'll be right back. Today's programming sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare. Information on their health plans available at CatholicHealthShare.com. That's CatholicHealthShare.com.
This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and RelevantRadio.com. Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now.
You could probably tell that we're back. 888-914-9149. A few updates for you. This is for your good to know file. Denmark has presented its own digital coronavirus passport, enabling people to travel abroad or in Denmark to go to a hairdresser, a tattoo parlor, dine inside a restaurant, or whatever else they need to do. Finance Minister Nikolaj Wammen says the corona passport we present today can be used from July the 1st when you travel within the EU. Some 20% of Denmark's population of 6 million has been fully vaccinated, according to the latest figures. During a press conference outside the Copenhagen airport, Health Minister Magnus Heunicke, I probably am butchering that, held up his phone to show the app, which only features a QR code and a green bar if the person has been vaccinated twice or recently tested negative for COVID-19. He says, what we get now is an app that makes it easier and simpler to use. There is no doubt that we will have to use it over the summer, but it is, of course, something that needs to be phased out. Yeah, well, we'll see if it's phased out. Interesting thing about these coronavirus passports, Cyrus, and I wonder is, can it be hacked? We saw the hacking of the gasoline pipeline, didn't we?
Yeah, and there was another one.
Involving beef, right?
Beef, yes, thank you.
Yeah. What's your beef with that, Cyrus?
Where's yeah. the beef?
So the beef supply chain got hacked, apparently, and I guess it's the people who encrypt things and demand a ransom. It's mind-boggling to me that these entities would even pay the ransom, because you're just teaching them that crime pays. But what if there's some country/whatever who hacks into the system and changes everybody's... It's kind of like Ferris Bueller hacking into the high school computer system and changing his grade. You remember that scene from Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
It says here your son's been absent from school 9 times.
And then it's going 8, 7, 6.
That's right.
That scene, yeah. So I mean, whether it's a kid in high school in his mother's basement or it's a China, if it's on the internet, it can be hacked. It seems to me. So here's a related story. This is from Bloomberg. The U.S. has taken a closer look at vaccine passports for international travel, says Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas. Mayorkas, speaking on ABC's Good Morning America ahead of the U.S. Memorial Day holiday, was asked about creating the documents for flights into and out of the U.S. He says, we're taking a very close look at that. One of our principles that has guided us through the pandemic is the value of diversity, equity, and inclusion. They cannot do anything without bringing up these buzzwords, can they? Making sure that any passport we provide for vaccinations is accessible to all and that no one is disenfranchised. And so we're taking a very... So they inject race and racism into everything.
We should start doing that to the show open. It's like the Patrick Madrid show, bringing diversity and
let's go through the list here. We bring the value of diversity, equity, and inclusion, and we make sure that any caller... Now, this it would get bogged down. I don't think that would work.
By the time you finished, it'd be like, oh, and that's it. That's all we have for today.
They're like one-trick ponies. It's just they've got one message, and they apply it to everything. Whoever suggested that a vaccine passport would not be available to people or any group of people? Anyway, so that's in the works. U.S. health officials, according to Bloomberg here, have lifted virtually all restrictions, including most mask mandates for vaccinated people. That move has left businesses, states, and cities with a problem. There's no way to identify who is vaccinated. This is true. The European Union plans to open up quarantine-free travel for tourists vaccinated with EU-approved drugs, including those used in the U.S., but the U.S. has yet to reciprocate. Some EU countries have already loosened restrictions. Now, there's a related story here, and I want to share this briefly before we press on. Yeah, here it is. I'm going to tell you what I think about this, but let me just share with you the story. This is from the Daily Wire. A Tennessee hat store is apologizing after backlash over the store's sale of yellow Star of David patches with the words "not vaccinated" emblazoned on them. Did you see these, Cyrus? It's like what the Jews were forced to wear on their clothing when the Nazis would round them up from the ghettos and then send them off to the concentration camps.
Oh,
did you see the picture of this?
No, I haven't seen this one.
Well, I'll tell you right up front. I think it's offensive, and
they're using that same star.
It's the same star, and they have the letters "not vaccinated" written in a script that looks like Hebrew. It's not Hebrew; it's English, but it looks like Hebrew. I think it's disrespectful to the memory of the Jews who died. I mean, we're not talking about somebody dying or being killed for their faith or even just for their ethnicity. So anyway, let me just finish reading this. The Nashville store issued an apology per Instagram a week ago, saying no disrespect was intended by selling the Star of David badges. The owner of the store says, in no way did I intend to trivialize the Star of David or disrespect what happened to millions of people. Well, that's the net effect, if you ask me. She says, that is not who I am and what I stand for. My intent was not to exploit or make a profit. My hope was to share my genuine concern and fear, and I do all that I can to make sure nothing like that ever happens. Yeah. The no longer active Instagram post that sparked controversy featured a picture of the store owner sporting the Star of David patch and said trucker caps with the same design would also be available. So they were selling them, and people were buying them.
Is it funny?
I don't find it funny. I think it's in very poor taste, to put it lightly.
I just don't understand. I don't understand. Yeah, I don't get the joke. If there is a joke, even if it's dark and wrong, I just don't get it.
Yeah, I really don't think it was a joke because I saw this story from a few different sources. And so my sense of it is that it was kind of like their protest statement against Dr. Fauci or against wearing masks or against vaccination. And fair enough, I recognize that there are many people of goodwill who just, this is not something that they like or want.
So it's like that story you told earlier about, was it in Seattle, you get 50% off if you throw your mask away? It's like them, but to a whole nother level.
Yeah, that's a good association. I think that that's an accurate comparison. But as you say, it goes beyond that. And what I found bothersome, to put it lightly about this, is that it does trivialize what all those Jews went through to the tune of at least 6 million of them who were forced to wear the Star of David. They were rounded up. They were sealed off in ghettos, like in Warsaw, for example. They were not allowed out. And then once Hitler gave the order, they were rounded up and sent to these concentration camps, and they were killed. So to try to kind of portray yourself as if you were like them, because you're not vaccinated and people might look at you funny or give you a hard time or think less of you, that is nothing in comparison to what the Jews went through who went through the concentration camps. I don't know. That's all. To me, that seems like a very obvious misstep, but it's done now because they shut that thing down. I don't know if the store's still open, but so I wanted you to know about it. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Lee now in San Jose, California. Good morning, Lee.
Hi, Patrick. I was wanting to comment on that fellow that talked a little while ago who was alcoholic.
Yeah.
I'm alcoholic as well. Been sober quite a while. When I started, when I came into AA, I was not going to church. I came back to church because of that. But I never took the cup because it had alcohol in it.
Right.
And I had talked with some alcoholic priests who they have to take the cup as part of their the service. So, but I was at Mass one day and I took the cup, and another friend in the program saw me, and I don't want to use this word, you know, she was upset or scandalized that I took the cup. And I thought about it more and more, and I had to explain it at meetings and so forth about what it truly means, the real presence. Mm-hmm. But I stopped taking the cup in order not to do that, to lest others don't understand. I get the full grace from communion, and so that's what I've decided to do.
Right.
So
right.
I would suggest that, especially if this guy is new, it could possibly be a trigger, because if people look at it not as the blood of Christ and as wine, even though it's got the same, you know, faculties, it's better that they don't, just to mess with their minds.
Right.
That would be
right.
My opinion.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And you're in essence kind of echoing what St. Paul said about not causing a weaker brother to stumble. So he says, everything is lawful for me, but not everything is helpful. And there are some things that he doesn't do in the presence of a weaker brother so as not to cause that weaker brother to stumble. That's in Romans chapter 14.
So, I appreciate that. I'm going to take note of that.
Yeah, yeah. You have it on good authority from St. Paul himself, Romans 14. More power to you. Now, did you know, maybe you do, but the church does permit something called a form of wine called mustum. And it is, here's the thing to remember, that in order to be valid as the matter for Mass, as the matter for the Holy Eucharist, it has to be grape wine. It can't be grape juice. It can't be something other than grape wine, and in order to be wine, there has to be some alcoholic content. But mustum is it's wine that has very, very, very little alcoholic content in it. But in order to be valid, it has to have some; otherwise, it's not wine.
Correct.
So it seems like the most likely workaround for a person in your situation would be just to receive only under one kind, receive the Eucharistic bread. And then you're not putting yourself in that situation.
That's exactly right. And to me, it did not, it didn't affect me. It didn't trigger me, let's say, but it might have others in that they saw it as me going out or something like that. And going out would be, you know, drinking again. So.
Right, which you're not, but I understand the point you're making. So you're being sensitive to somebody. You're basically a weaker brother or sister who might stumble in seeing that.
Exactly. Romans chapter 14.
Yeah, that's right. Where did I hear that before? Well, thanks. Thank you. Keep on trucking, man. Now, there may be some confusion out there. I'm told that one person called in to say, hey, don't forget, you receive all of Jesus' body, blood, soul, and divinity when you receive under one species or the other. And that's true. And if you've listened to this program, you've heard me say that a million times. It's true. And that's why I say it as often as I do. There was a heresy in the church that was known as utraquism, and that's a phrase in Latin that means both and. You got to have both. And this was a misunderstanding of the Holy Eucharist in some areas where people thought, unless I receive both the host and the precious blood, I'm not getting all of Jesus. And the church said, no, if you receive even the smallest sip of the precious blood, you receive all of Jesus, body, blood, soul, and divinity. And the same is true if you receive even just a small particle of the host, you receive all of Jesus, body, blood, soul, and divinity. So one thing to remember is that for lay people to receive under both kinds or both species is very new. I mean, this is a very recent thing in the life of the church. It's not that it wasn't found in some places, perhaps in the early church, but by and large, for the greater part of the church's history, at least in the Latin Rite, lay people never received, ever. I mean, maybe at their wedding, perhaps, or, you know, maybe in some other very special case, they might be permitted to receive both the precious blood and the host, but generally speaking, no. So I think many people nowadays who like receiving under both kinds might be under the misimpression that they have to do both in order to get the full effect, and that's not true. So just to make sure that everybody's aware. Let's go to Jennifer now, listening in Rockland, California. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning, Patrick. How are you?
I am well, thank you.
I had a question that came up in conversation last night. So if the wages of sin are death, then if you die not in a state of grace or not accepting Jesus as your Savior, then do you just cease to exist, or is hell an actual place where you would suffer eternally?
It's the latter.
And that hell is a place that you suffer eternally. Is there biblical support for that?
Yeah, there's an immense amount of biblical support. In fact, somebody once did the counting. I don't have it in front of me, but they found that I think it's 2-1, if I'm not mistaken, Jesus warning about hell more than he talks about heaven. So if you're looking for some examples of Scripture, look at Matthew 25, where we see this, where Jesus describes the coming judgment when he comes on the clouds with all the angels and he separates all the people into two categories, the sheep and the goats. Remember that one? And when he refers to the goats, he says, and these will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. He says in Matthew chapter 10, verse 28, and do not fear those who can kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather fear him who can destroy both body and soul in hell. There's just so many of these examples. Jesus says in Matthew 5, verse 22, I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to the council, and whoever says, you fool, will be liable to the hell of fire. Now, these are just passages from what Jesus himself said, but there are countless examples among the other apostolic writers, St. Paul, and also in the book of Revelation, just a constant refrain of reminders about hell and the fires of hell. And then we see it all concluded in Revelation chapter 20, verse 14, where it says, then, this is after the new heavens and the new earth, and everything has been concluded. It says, then death and Hades were thrown into the lake of fire. This is the second death, the lake of fire. So all of those damned souls will end up in that place. So, I mean, I could go on and on, but I think you get the point.
Yep, I thought so.
All right.
I just didn't know in argument, so thank you for that.
No problem at all. You're welcome, Jennifer. Thank you. All right. Break time, I think, right, Cyrus? Or are we going to? Yeah, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back with more. I'm waiting for my musical cues here on the Patrick Madrid Show. We have some more ground to cover, and we'll do that right after this quick timeout. Please stay right there. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Cyrus, try to imagine this song without that bass part. You can't do it. It wouldn't be the same song.
Don't want to.
Little Boz Scaggs in the morning. 888-914-9149. We'll go to Rose now in Chula.
Addressing the idea of suicide, and he was dedicating the Mass and the Rosary following the Mass to the victims, the families and the friends that were left behind. He mentioned a book called The Kiss from the Cross, but he said it's probably out of circulation now because it was in 1994 that it was written. Do you have any books that you would recommend to family and friends who have loved ones who have committed suicide?
I do. Now, I'm not familiar with that particular book, so I don't know what to tell you about that. But two that I have found very helpful, one is called Arise from Darkness, What to Do When Life Doesn't Make Sense. And certainly in the aftermath of a loved one's suicide, I can only imagine how desolate and inconsolate people feel. So that book was written by Father Benedict Groeschel, who was not only a Catholic priest and a very wise man, but he also was a trained, I believe he was a clinical psychologist, if I'm not mistaken. So he had academic training in that field. The second book I recommend often is by Dr. Peter Kreeft, K-R-E-E-F-T. And that book is called Making Sense Out of Suffering. And he has a section in there about, you know, dealing with untimely death, for example. How do you deal with that? How do you process that? So either or both of those two books, I think, would be very good.
Oh, wonderful. Oh, thank you so much, Patrick. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you. And I will pray for consolation to come to all those people who are suffering with that. Let's go now to James in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Hi, James.
Hi, Patrick. Just want to start, what a great honor it is to talk to you. I enjoy you every day and really enjoy the show a lot.
Thank you. I'm honored that you would say so.
Well, my question is, I read a daily devotional, and one of the reflections was from Mark 16, verse 15 to 20. It was talking about signs of believers.
Okay.
And I was just hoping you could kind of give your opinion of what Jesus was after with a couple of those signs. One was picking up serpents with your hands.
Yeah.
And the other one was drinking deadly things and not being harmed. I just, you know, wanted to get your opinion of what he was trying to get at with that.
Yeah. Well, the literal meaning of this passage, and I'll read it so that everybody's familiar with what it says. The literal meaning is what Jesus said. And there were examples of this in the apostolic era. And for that matter, even a little bit longer than that, it seems like some of these miraculous signs of Christ's true followers eventually sort of faded from view. In fact, I think I've mentioned before that during his time, St. Augustine dealt with this very argument that was raised by some of his critics who said, well, if you're really the followers of Jesus, where are the miracles? And so St. Augustine said, well, because they're no longer necessary, the church is established. And he lived from the year 354 to the year 430. So he was still very early in the life of the church, but it seems that by then, these miraculous signs were no longer necessary, and therefore they were not present for the most part. So the passage says in verse 15, Jesus said to them, go into the whole world and preach the gospel to the whole creation. He who believes and is baptized will be saved, but he who does not believe will be condemned. And these signs will accompany those who believe. In my name they will cast out demons. They will speak in new tongues. They will pick up serpents, and if they drink any deadly thing, it will not hurt them. They will lay their hands on the sick, and they will recover. So those signs right there did accompany many of the early church figures. So we have examples in the book of Acts where St. Peter, even his shadow, falling across somebody who was ill, that in itself was enough to restore the person to health. Cloths that were touched to the apostles and then touched to people who were ill, and they recovered. So these are things that we know did happen, but after, I would say, certainly by the time we get to St. Augustine, it appears as though they were no longer happening. So to answer your question, literally, these things happened. Another example took place on the island of Malta with St. Paul, who was gathering some firewood for a fire to keep people warm and to cook food and such. And we're told that a poisonous serpent crawled out of the branches of wood and bit him on the hand. It didn't just bite him. It says it fastened itself to his hand. And the people were really afraid because they thought, this guy's a goner. But St. Paul just simply shook the snake off, and he shook it off into the fire. So roasted snake for dinner that night. But there is an example of handling a poisonous serpent and not being harmed by it. So St. Paul was completely unharmed by this. He was unscathed. So there are some biblical examples of this taking place. I hope that's helpful, and I appreciate the chance to talk about that. Thank you. Let's go to Pam now. Pam is on the air. All right. We don't have Pam. Let's go to Arlene in Philadelphia. Good morning, Arlene.
Yes. Good morning, Patrick. Patrick, could you tell me how I could find a spiritual director?
Sure. It's not difficult to do. I advise people to look for a good priest who is experienced and has enough time on the job, so to speak, that he's got the experience and the knowledge to give you good advice. If you were to go to relevantradio.com/Patrick, you'll see a link that says, well, it says links. And if you click that, you can navigate to where I have articles. It's actually, you'll find it on the blog, and it's on what to look for in a good spiritual director. What are the qualities to look for in a good spiritual director? And to make it easier for you, what we'll do is we'll get a link to this on the show Twitter feed, and that's embedded at relevantradio.com/Patrick. Okay. So if you go there, you'll be able to read this lengthy article that includes a link to a book by a Dominican friar by the name of Father Jordan Amon. And he talks at some length about what are the qualities for a good spiritual director. That would be a good place to start.
The only thing is, Patrick, I don't use a computer.
Okay. Well, I'm sure you have friends or family or somebody who does, and maybe you could ask them to just go to relevantradio.com/Patrick and look there and get the link, and then they could print it out for you, you know, and then print it out for you to read. I would try that. Now, but short of that, it's not as though you have to read that, but if you want kind of in-depth information from this priest, Father Jordan Amon, that would be helpful. But you could simply just ask your pastor, you know, Father, would you be willing to be my spiritual director? And he may say, I'm awfully busy, Arlene, I can't do it, but let me recommend this priest who's retired, and he might be able to do it. So if he's not able to do it, I'm sure he can refer you.
Okay.
All right. All right. That's helpful, Arlene. God bless you, and thank you for calling. Let's go to Pam again in New Jersey. Hello, Pam. Welcome back.
Well, stay home and make them.
All right. Well, we don't have Pam again. Yay.
I got a bad feeling about this.
We tried twice. Let's go to Jerry now in Skokie, Illinois. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning. My question is, I'm getting mixed up with the seven virtues of the Holy Spirit and the seven gifts. Mm-hmm. Some of them seem the same thing. And then there are other virtues that I would classify as a virtue, but it's not listed as the Vatican Seven that I have. Well, I wonder what you have to say about that.
Well, I was really just going to say what the church says. So we have the gifts of the Holy Spirit as they're given to us in Scripture. I mean, so that much we've got. I can enumerate them for you. So we've got wisdom, understanding.
Yeah, and I have that written down too. That I think one of the big problems is that different words are given to the same virtue. That they'll say fortitude, or in other words, another virtue that would. Is still the same thing, but it's called by a different name. Also, the fact that they say there are seven virtues, say, and that four of them are cardinals, and three of them are theological.
Yeah, I understand the question. Well, you're right about that, Jerry, that there are sometimes different translations where you'll have different words. So fortitude might sometimes be called courage. So as I was saying a moment ago, wisdom, understanding, counsel, fortitude, knowledge, piety, fear of the Lord. St. Thomas gives a treatise on this. So if you are interested in reading what he has to say, just maybe ask. You can do it online if you wanted to. You could read from the Summa Theologiae what he says about these virtues, and you'll find a lot there. But I think just running out of time here, that's about all I can tell you. If you have a copy of the Catechism of the Catholic Church, they're also discussed there as well. That'd be another good place to go. I am out of time. 888-91. Why am I saying the number? I'm out of time. It's just habit, I guess. Right, Cyrus? It's habit. Muscle memory.
It's kind of like, oh, this smells awful. Here, smell it. Oh, this tastes bad. Try it.
Oh, try it.
Yeah. See how bad. Oh, we're out of time. Here's the phone number.
Look at that. Yeah. Well, we'll circle back tomorrow. Same Pat time, same Pat channel. Yeah, we'll do it tomorrow. And who knows? Maybe somebody out there, some enterprising, musically inclined person, will do an auto tune of us on this program. I would find that fascinating. They did one of Mr. Rogers that was really well done, and they turned his spoken word into a song. They also did one of Carl Sagan. I don't know if you've heard those, Cyrus.
The
we'll
Mr. Roger one is the Garden of Your Mind, right?
Yeah. Why don't you get that ready for tomorrow? We'll play a little bit of that on the show tomorrow.